I really believe that generosity precedes prosperity.
Love it.
I love that.
A lot of times people think, oh, when I do well, then I'll give back. And I actually think we should give forward.
Hey, and welcome to Stopping By. I'm Doug Pierce, Senior Vice President and Financial Advisor with Pinnacle Wealth Partners at UBS Financial.
And I'm Jess DeBear, Associate Director and Senior Wealth Strategy Associate, also with Pinnacle Wealth Partners. We are located in Mount Laurel, New Jersey, and can be reached at pwp@ubs.com.
Our team's mission, our just cause, is to bring financial literacy and competency to the masses. We've been fortunate to meet interesting people along the way. They have compelling life stories about overcoming adversity and seeking their passions. Hopefully, you'll see that our guests are just like you. So Jess, who's stopping by today?
Doug, I am so excited because we have yet another New York Times bestselling author. Today we have Ellen Rogan. She is not affiliated with UBS Financial Services and her views are her own.
All right, Jess, let's meet who's stopping by.
Big day today here in the U.S.
The eclipse day?
Yeah. Turn around, bright eyes. Turn around, bright eyes.
Supposedly that song is exactly the same length of the eclipse. 4.5 minutes.
First of all, the song came out when you were like a zygote. First of all.
No, that's not fair. I was dancing at a sixth grade dance. 83. All right. Well, so I was alive, but I was not dancing at a sixth grade dance, I guess, when that came out. It was already a classic at that point. Maybe the DJ was geared to not the students.
The
they
moms.
Were more about the chaperone.
The DJ's like spinning his whatever, and the moms are like, turn around. Let me ask you, let me go deep here, Doug. Do you think growing up, your relationship with money brought you to this career? Because, you know, I don't know if our listeners know that you were wanted to be a doctor. Dr. Piers. Mm. You wanted to be a doctor, and then you went to Penn and you failed. And so then you fell into.
No, I thought about this. I think about this a lot. And I don't know this is, I don't believe this is revisionist history, but I think that I wanted to go into medicine. Yes, I like science. I really like helping people is what I really kind of understand about myself now. Being able to help people was a draw. And so it wasn't until I got into school and what happened to throw me out of the medical field was I couldn't get a lab job. I couldn't get the research to apply. That was my whole thing. So I was trying to get a lab job on my resume and I had waited too long. So it was fortuitous that I couldn't get into that world. And then I learned about this whole other personal finance world. And I thought, I get to help people. I do have thoughts about, that'd be interesting. I wonder what that would have looked like, what my life would have looked like. But the reality is, I think that it's intriguing to me. I'm interested in that still. But this is definitely more captivating, right? Mm-hmm. Because there are more things that are changing. There's the way you help people, you can see it. You can realize it much faster. We're always going to help people. That's the whole, the gist of it.
Yes. Did you answer my question about how your relationship with money growing up?
She talked about this. Ellen talks about this a lot. And I think it's really an important topic about the scarcity mindset. I think it's used oftentimes to scare people that, if they have the money, we've created money is not a finite resource. And I think that's really important. And it's not until you are kind of waking up to the world that you realize, it's not. It's out there for the take. So I think that was something that sort of woke my eyes up. Like, there's a million careers out there that I never thought existed. And once you realize that, it's not like you can't participate in the game. Mm-hmm. And I feel that's important to lessons that you need to sort of teach kids and need to teach people that haven't had that lesson.
Mm-hmm. All right, Doug, should we kick it off here?
Let's do it.
I am so excited about our guest today because not only is she another New York Times bestselling author to stop by, she has made it her mission to help people reshape their thinking and their relationship with money. Our guest today is speaker, author, and money expert Ellen Rogan. Ellen teaches lessons on living a life of success and prosperity. Her work has been featured on CNBC, ABC, and NPR, and also in Time and Oprah magazines. Step back. Ellen gives insight on how to have an increased sense of peace around money. She serves on the board of directors for Metropolitan Capital Bank and Trust and the Ghana Scholarship Fund, and earned her MBA at the NYU Stern School of Business. Wow. In her latest book, Messages from Money, Ellen asks, would you want to hang around you if you were money? I would like to say, I think I would like to hang around me because I think I'm kind of a hoot, you know, but I don't know if my family, my parent, my children and my husband would agree with that. But regardless, ladies and gentlemen, we bring you Ellen Rogan today. Ellen, thanks for stopping by.
Oh my gosh, thank you for having me. And I'm sure both of you are great to hang around with money because this is like the biz you're in and money really appreciates that. So.
Money likes to have fun. I'll tell you what, it's working so hard all the time. It likes to have fun, and that's where we come in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I feel a Cyndi Lauper song coming in there somehow. maybe we should reach out to Cyndi. Write us a song. All right. So, Ellen, we like to kick off our podcast by asking our guests, can you share with us your earliest memory surrounding money?
Yeah. So one of my earliest memories around money was my dad going off to work and my mother staying home with me. I would say, Mommy, why does Daddy have to go to work? And she said, to make money. And I said, why does he need to make money? And she said, to buy Ellen toys. Yeah. And I thought that was great when I was little. And then fast forward, I'm in my late 20s, starting my own financial advisory practice. And in the back of my mind, it was like, oh, Dad goes off to make money. And in my examined at the time till I examined it belief system was, oh, that's my husband's job. And further, I can't even do that, which made no sense. I have lots of letters after my name. Yeah. And yet we have these beliefs that hang out in the background. And until we take them from back here and bring them here from behind our subconscious and bring them so we can examine them, they just play in the background. And sometimes it just is a matter of me going, well, that is ridiculous. That doesn't even make sense.
Right.
To get rid of a limiting belief. But I sometimes think back, gosh, if I hadn't realized that, would I have been as successful in my financial advisory practice or now my career as a speaker and writer and coach? Like, I don't think so.
That's a good point. I mean, we love a good origin story. And so I think you had a career as an auditor, then you moved into wealth management. I'd like to know about making the decision to pivot, to go and become an author and a public speaker and a coach and to helping people. How do you get that? Tell me what that decision was like, you know, selling a practice and moving into this other part of your career.
Yeah. So it was a decision that came over a period of time. I actually built my advisory practice from speaking. I had written two books while I still had my practice. And I realized that I wanted to have a bigger impact in the work that I did than more than the people that I could sit across the table from. And I knew I just had a bigger work in the world to do than that. And I had been thinking about it for quite a while. One of the things I do that Jessica mentioned in my bio is I'm on a board for a scholarship fund in Ghana, and I came back from a trip from there, and I'm like, you know what? I'm done. I'm not serving my clients or my team for me being like mentally half in and half out. That's what made the decision. It was a big identity shift for me as well, to go from being like the expert and having clients rely on me on that, and then being a different kind of expert in the work that I'm doing now.
You basically had an epiphany that if you build it, they will come. And you did things. It is hard to build an advisory business. Be a financial advisor. There's a lot of flame out. A lot of people don't actually have a business. And to have a business for 25 years and then say, I'm going to leave it. Did you have people in your life that was like, hey, Ellen, you got it good. Like, you're in a good situation. Just let's think about this.
Several people, one of which was my husband initially, because he's like, wait, what? And I'm like, wait, time out. I'm a financial planner by background. We're going to be okay. Even if I never make any more money, we'll be okay. So that was part of it. But the guys that I hired to help me with some of the business sale were like, I don't get it, Ellen. You're making a lot of money. You're not working that much. Why are you selling? And I'm like, you want to tell my clients that? Like, like, is that a reason to keep a business?
Yeah.
And yeah. To me, I just didn't feel good about that. And I was also called to do more.
I'm glad that your husband was a little alarmed. That means, you know, usually when you get your partner scared about something, that's probably a good idea that you, oh, good, we're going to be outside of our comfort zone. Uh-huh. But that's why Jess and I wanted to have you to talk to you, because I think your interest is like ours. You know, we talk about our just cause. And that's an important thing for us as well, is we're helping people, but there's a lot more people that you can help by sort of broaching out. So we're aligned in that regard.
Yeah.
Yes, for sure. And I love that that's one of the reasons that you're doing this podcast, is to get information out to people that may never be able to be your client for a variety of reasons. So I think that's beautiful.
Let's talk about it. Let's talk about around the time when you sold your business, you had this life-changing experience, a money epiphany, if you will. Tell our listeners about that.
I was always very intuitive with people's money issues. I used to know if they'd be okay for retirement without having to run projections, which of course I ran them, but I just had this knowing. But I had this epiphany, as you called it, when I was at a workshop with some other speakers and coaches, and we were doing some activities around intuition. I was paired with this guy, James, and the facilitator said, okay, think about an issue with money, and then your partner will just deliver a message and just trust what comes out. So I was with this guy, James. I had my hands on his back, and he was thinking about an issue with money. And when he turned around, out of my mouth comes, "F you for thinking that you can't be spiritual and have me in your life." And I was like,
wow.
And he pulls out from his shirt, he said, "Ellen, I'm wearing the patron saint of poverty. One of my clients gave me this pendant." And he took it off. And I said, "Oh, now I want to be with you." And I grabbed his hand and we started walking together. Now, this blew me away because, first of all, I like to swear, but not at somebody I don't know, not in a professional setting.
Right.
It woke both of us up. And afterwards, I said to the facilitator, like, "What was that?" He goes, "Oh, that was just your intuition coming out." So since then, many years later, my process now when I work with people with this intuitive guidance is I journal with what I think of as the energy of money. And I get messages for people.
That's Field of Dreams right there. That's basically the plot line.
It's very law of attraction, right? You put it out, it comes back.
And just to be clear, I never swear at anyone anymore that messages that come through are very affirmational. People leave feeling better. And just a footnote on that story, years later, I saw James, we were both speaking at a conference. And I said, "Can I share your story?" Because of course it's confidential. Like what you guys do, you would never talk about your clients.
Right.
And he said, "Oh, yeah." And he goes, "Ellen, since then, my business has skyrocketed. He looked different." That's what I love hearing and hear over and over, that people feel better, but they're also getting the results that they were looking for.
So let's talk about your latest book, Messages from Money. So in the book, you talk about the connection between our beliefs surrounding money and the reality of it. So first of all, can you tell us what inspired you to write the book?
I wanted people to have some tools to move from thinking, worrying, scarcity, thinking about money, to thoughts around abundance. Mm-hmm. What I know is that what we think and what we say about our money has a huge impact on what shows up in our lives. And I'm sure you see this with your clients, both of you, that someone may feel impoverished, even though they have millions and millions and millions of dollars.
Sure.
People that just spend so much time worrying about things, or perhaps where I see also things coming up is this belief that many people are brought up with, that it has to be really hard work. And so they stay in jobs they're miserable in because that's how it's supposed to be. That was the idea behind this, is like, how can I give people tools to move from scarcity to abundance thinking so that they can use their money in ways that serve themselves, their families, and their communities in better ways.
Let's dive in there. A lot of times when people have a dysfunction with money, there's a roadblock on, like, you can see the numbers, what's the problem? What is it, number one, you see it in people and then draw it out in them? Or how do you approach somebody when they're in an emotional state to try to get them to be rational about their money relationship?
So I think that's an interesting question, because I don't think any of us have a rational relationship with money. A metaphor that I think is helpful, like, so this discussion about my intuitive money skills may be like, that is, someone might, may or may not resonate with that at all. But I think it's a really helpful metaphor for us to think about a relationship that we do have with money. I believe we actually have one, but even if it's just a metaphor for you, to be thinking about, if this were a personal relationship, how you are with money, how are you showing up? Like, are you really a good partner to money? I often think people think about, well, how's money showing up for me, or it's not showing up? And I think it's helpful to think about both sides. Like, how would you love your relationship to be with money, and how is it actually working?
So talk about, you mentioned scarcity, the rule of scarcity. How did you learn that?
I can give you a story about when it showed up in my business.
Yeah.
So I think I was born an optimist. When my second book, Picture of Prosperity, came out, we got reviewed in the New York Times, and the guy said it was relentlessly upbeat. I like to think that's like a sign I have on me. I'm relentlessly upbeat, which can be slightly annoying. But I've always realized that feeling good and optimistic feels better and works better than the opposite. And I was talking, it was January, and it was a while ago when we only talked on the phone with people, unless we were meeting with them personally. And I was on the phone with my business coach, Phyllis, and I was crying, and I'm not a crier. And I said, Phyllis, I'm so upset. I'm so embarrassed as a financial advisor, but we're running up debt. We had real estate that was not rented. I was pissed at my husband because I felt like at the time he made a unilateral decision to leave his job. I was just like downloading on Phyllis. And she listened and listened, and in the most loving way, slapped me across the phone line and said, Ellen, I've known you quite a while, and I know you know the difference between scarcity and abundance thinking. And I have to say, it sounds like you're coming from a place of scarcity. I was in blame. I was worrying. I was victim-y about the whole thing. And I'm like, oh my God, you're right. And in that moment, I switched and said, okay, I'm going to do whatever it takes, of course, within ethics, but to have a different situation. And by the end of the year, we were out of credit card debt. I was like happily married again. And yeah, so I had an actual experience of how things changed when I was focusing on more abundance. Besides, it feels better to do it.
Can you describe that philosophy for our listeners? I'm sure they got notebooks when they listen to our podcast.
Of course.
They do.
Yeah, it may be helpful to think about scarcity versus abundance, and what does that actually mean? So scarcity thinking is fear-based, worried, aggressive competition. Like, for me to win, you have to lose. There's only so much to go around. Could be envy. Like, when something really good happens to a friend of yours, instead of being excited for them and wanting to give them a standing ovation, you're envious, like, and judgy. Like, oh, they did that. They got that success because blah, blah, blah. Or they're so materialistic. That's why they have that fancy car and are going on these fancy trips. Or you could use it to beat yourself up. Like, should have been me. I should be doing better. So that's all in the scarcity area. Abundance thinking is optimistic. It's generous. This is, there's more than enough to go around. It's collaborative. This is about wanting to give business to other people because you know it'll flow back to you, whether it's directly from them or not.
Mm-hmm.
You can do financially well and be a scarcity thinker. It just sucks. Like, why would you want to?
Yeah.
Right? Why would you want to have that stress and anxiety and negative focus when you can do as well with more ease?
I want to go back to the book because in the book, you talk about the money MO chart and how it can give readers perspective on their relationship with money. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah. Not to be confused with Mo Money, right? Mo Money. That's a different, that's how I read it.
Mo Money?
I love that. So the way this chart came about, I was asked to speak for a group of very, 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 very ultra wealthy people. And I was brought in because the facilitator said a lot of these, they were all guys in this one group. A lot of these guys feel like they just can't get on the same page with their spouses about money. So I developed this chart to try to figure this out. So if we imagine on a vertical axis. So on the top, it's attention, and on the bottom, it's avoidance. And on the left side, it's judgment, and on the right side, it's appreciation. So if someone's high on attention and high on judgment, you can imagine one word might be control. Like, I know better. If you're high on judgment and high on avoidance, that might be blame. That I was in the bank right after I developed this, and I hear this guy say, oh yeah, the financial institutions, when they were lending so much money, that's why my son is like bankrupt now. I'm like, way to blame something else. So that is judgment and avoidance. Avoidance and appreciation. So now we're on the lower right-hand side. This could be passivity. This is someone who's really grateful. Maybe their partner is handling more of the finances, or maybe they have like an amazing advisor and they're like, oh, you handle this. And I'm so grateful for you to do that. Now, I know your clients trust you and you're wanting their trust, but you also want them to know what's going on and be involved, right?
Yeah.
Not just like, and then high attention and high appreciation is where prosperity lives. But before I let that upper right-hand quadrant out of, you know, saying like, you're the best, you can imagine somebody who like is happy to pay attention and is really appreciative and takes control for everyone in their family because they love them and is not educating them and is not getting them set up. So that's, you know, there's some responsibility with being an abundance thinker is bringing other people along with you, making sure they're educated and understand. I think it's interesting for people to think of where they are. In this one group, this guy said, I am off the charts on attention. I can't sleep at night because I'm paying so much attention to my money. And you guys, I know this, but some of your listeners might not, is when people pay too much attention to their money, they actually get worse results. Because they feel like they have to do something about it all the time.
Yeah.
And there's not a long-term perspective and there's not a planning perspective. But I think the important thing is that both spouses really know what's going on. There should be a delegation of duties because we can't all do everything. That's why I think having advisors like you guys are so helpful, because sometimes it's hard for couples to have the money conversations. And when there's a third person in the room or a fourth person, then those conversations can be a little bit more productive.
Can we talk a little bit about Prosperity Pie? So the components of Prosperity Pie in the book, Aware, Clear, Care, and Share.
Yeah, I realized that there's really four parts that help people create prosperity on purpose. And the slices of the prosperity pie, if you will, are being aware. So this goes, Doug, as we were just talking about contemplative practices, is noticing what are you thinking about money? So being aware of what you think and what you say about money, being clear, and clear is really a couple parts. Clear is where you want to go. This is when you're all doing financial plans for people. Where is it that you want to be? And I also think about clear is the power of our minds to help us envision where we want to go. I don't think people think about this in business as much as they should. Before I have any big meeting, a speaking engagement, I'm envisioning exactly how I want it to play out. Now, if you just stopped at aware and clear, that doesn't always work for people, right? Like, you can't just sit on your meditation pillow chanting Om, waiting for the universe to provide.
Wait, I can't.
Oh, dang it.
The next part is care. This is taking care. We live in a material world. It's about knowing where your money's going. It's about getting good advice and support and making smart investment decisions and putting all the pieces together. Money wants you to care for it. So aware, what we're thinking, clear, where do you want to go and how are you going to get there? And care, really important. Then last part is share. And this is about being generous. I really believe in that generosity precedes prosperity.
Love it.
I love that.
A lot of times people think, oh, when I do well, then I'll give back. And I actually think we should give forward. Because what I saw when I was an advisor during recessions is people would hang on so tightly to what they had. Like, I'm not going to be okay. And so much worry. And I'm making fists right now. And if your fists are clenched, you can't receive.
You gave a TED Talk, which was very impressive. I think you are our first guest to have a TED Talk. And that was one of the things that I really took away, which was It's better to give and receive. If you don't, if you're not receptive, I love that idea that you're impinging on someone's ability to be generous back to you. I think that is a really kind of rocked my world hearing that. Your speaking was just, it was a phenomenal TED Talk though. To our guests, go get on YouTube. It's really cool to take
advantage of. Thank you, Doug. I appreciate that. And it's about how to teach your kids about money in different ways. It's about these ideas of being generous. Like, wouldn't it be cool if, in addition to teaching our kids all about all that caring ways to take care of money, spending appropriately, spending on what you value, being good savers, being savvy investors, which of course you want people to grow up knowing how to do, you were also teaching them about being really grateful. Yeah. And being generous. Let me just take a pause because I'm feeling like this would be really helpful to share.
Yeah.
Before, there was a lot of research on gratitude when our kids were little. Like now there's tons of research how having a gratitude practice makes you happier. It lowers depression. It grateful people make more money. It even lowers inflammation, which I'm not sure how that is, but it does.
Crazy. Yes.
But before then, I had a theory. When I worked with my clients, were all really good savers. And when I would talk to them, they would tell me how grateful they were. And they would focus on like, oh, it'd be great to do redo my kitchen. But you know what? Things are fine. I feel so lucky. I'm so blessed that this and this and this. They would tell me what was going well. And people that I would meet with that were overspenders would always tell me what wasn't working for them. We don't take big fancy trips. We don't drive fancy cars. They would tell me what didn't work. So kind of scarcity thinking, but also feeling a little ungrateful. So when our kids were little, I'm like, I have a theory. Grateful people end up with more money. And so when our kids were little, we would share five things every night that they were grateful for. And I expected them to be materialistic. And they would share things like, Mommy, I'm so grateful for my teachers and my friends. One night, Benji, he was in fifth grade, said to me, Mommy, I'm so grateful you and Daddy are so magnanimous and we live in such a utopia and our life is so fortuitous. And I'm like, huh?
Benji?
Where did you come from?
Yeah, they were Mrs. Kramer's fifth grade spelling words.
Can we talk about money mantras? Can you tell our listeners what those are and how can they use them to improve their relationship with money?
Yeah. And so a money mantra, they started when I was doing when I do consultations for people or these intuitive money readings. At the end, I'll always ask money, do you have a money mantra for someone? And something comes through that's like an affirmation for them, something to keep in mind, to repeat over and over. And invariably, people go, oh, because it speaks to them.
Yeah.
So I was looking through the money mantras in the book, and the one that came out for the listeners for this that just felt like landed, I wanted to share, which is, I am clear, confident, and on my path to prosperity. I'm not a big believer in affirmations that you don't believe.
Sure.
Like, you know, like I have $10 million in my bank accounts. Like if that's not, well, first of all, they shouldn't be in your bank accounts.
All right.
So I need to come see you guys.
There we go.
Yeah. But I don't think if your next thought is, no, I don't, or that's BS, then I don't think that's really helpful.
Right.
I think if you can get behind something like, I'm on my path to prosperity, or I'm getting better every day, or I turn my vision into reality, something that you can get behind, I think it can be very helpful.
All right. Well, so along, do you have a money mantra? Or if I were to ask you,
it does change. The one that I like a lot, and then I'll tell you one that just came through last week for me. One I like a lot is, money and I are partners for good.
Oh,
like, we're partners in doing good and we're partners forever. Like, we're partners in doing good. And I was leading a workshop last week and I was having people visualize, like, actually them connecting with money and if money had a message for them. And the one that came through for me was, money loves me. I was like, oh, cool. So it's sitting right. I have a sticky sheet right here to remind me, money loves me.
I love that.
Like, and I love you too.
How do you say that too? That they came through. You know, it's almost like that's a spiritual thing, like the way you're saying it. They came through.
Yeah. And I'm not the only one with a bat phone to money. Like, I think we can all have our own intuition about things. We just have to get quiet enough and believe that there's a positive message out there for us. I mean, I've never gotten a message for someone. And when I do workshops, no one's ever gotten the message like, you suck. <That's>, you're destined for poverty. Like, that is never what comes through.
So I'm thinking about a lot of things in the professional realm. You are an author, you are a speaker, you are a coach. Which of those hats does it really kind of excite you or bring you a lot of joy? Monk, I'm sure you're enjoying, but all of them. Which
speaker,
one is the most exciting?
Speaker. I love it. It's my favorite thing to do. I feel like I can impact lots and lots of people that way, from one to many, like you're all doing on this podcast, right? Way this can spread as people are sharing this with other people, as people are sending it to people in their lives they know it would be helpful for. If I could sing and stay up late, I'd be a rock star. But that is not in this lifetime. I do a lot of speaking in financial services. I'd have the opportunity to go to different cool places around the world. And now I get to do even more on the Zoom.
One final thing. What does money mean to you?
Money is a force for good in the world. And part of what drives me and what had me leave my very successful advisory practice was this thought that if I can help people get to the point where they know they're going to be okay, because I know you guys know with people with millions and millions of dollars, sometimes they're worried they're not going to be okay.
Yeah.
But once we get to the point where we know we're going to be okay and can start asking how much can I give, the world will change. There's plenty of resources. And so I see money as a force for good in the world.
I love that. I absolutely love that. I think that's a great lesson. It's not a negative side of it. It can empower people. You made a really interesting point, Jess. We should write this down. We should have our listeners share our podcast with other people too. So if you're listening.
I was going to say, listeners, did you catch that part? Share the podcast.
Ellen had a great idea. We should.
What?
Well, and here's the thing. Like, seriously, of course, you want to get your message out, but it's an act of generosity.
So tell us what's up next for you. Do we have another book in the works? What's going on? Where are we? What's happening from here?
Yeah, I would say there's probably always another book in the works. Now that I've written my third one, I'm like, okay, when I thought after the second one, I'm like, I'm done. But then there's something else. Yeah, I would say more speaking. You know, I love it. I have some cool things coming up and I'm visualizing some even cooler ones in great places.
Ellen, you have been a beacon of positivity and we love that. We can't get enough of that. Like, there's a law of attraction out there. You put enough good vibes out there, it will come back. I imagine you do that with everybody in your life and you have done that with us and our listeners. So thanks for stopping by.
Oh my gosh. Thank you so much for inviting me and being open to having these kind of conversations and for all that you do to put out into the world for your just cause.
Aww. Very nice. Ellen.
This podcast is presented for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as investment advice or the basis for making any investment decisions. It does not constitute an offer to sell or a solicitation of an offer to buy any specific product or service. UBS does not provide legal or tax advice, and we would recommend listeners to obtain appropriate independent professional advice. Some of the views and opinions expressed may not be those of UBS Group AG or its affiliates. UBS Financial Services Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC registered broker dealer. These services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreements and disclosures that we provide about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary. UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS Group AG and is a member of FINRA and SIPC.